Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 33 of the History Lost in Time podcast. In this episode, I'll talk about a political topic, not really a historical one, if one can even properly differentiate between these. Historical topics are often very politicized.
The topic of this episode.
This topic is a rather theoretical one. Obviously, it will be politicized anyway, but that won't stop me. I was positively surprised to find out over the years that basic knowledge about the German political system is repeatedly demanded in school, job training, studies, and further education in Germany. And I was negatively surprised when I found out that basic knowledge about this often didn't really exist. I have trained friends, family, and acquaintances several times already on this topic, so I thought, why not make an episode out of this?
Political agenda and background.
None this time, and I'd preferred if the comments remained apolitical. I am aware that many now feel tormented and that they wish to, enlighten us about the influence of lobbyists, the victorious powers of World War II, the Illuminati, the lizard people, or whatever, depending on what type of conspiracy theory they are subscribed to. However, I ask that we just focus on how the political system of Germany works in theory, and that means how it is described in the basic law. I will focus on the basics, and therefore I won't discuss all details. I am aware that this topic may not be that interesting to the non-German listeners of this podcast, but, well, maybe you guys have to learn this in German class or something, so maybe it's helpful to you as well.
The sources that were used.
One can use the basic law as a source. However, as the political system of Germany is often taught using a picture, I suggest the pictures that Wikipedia uses. However, nobody has to open Wikipedia now. We will create these pictures together. Because, as we all know, or at least should know, you learn better when you're not just listening, but also watching and doing something yourself. At this point, you may pause the podcast briefly to get a few pieces of paper and a pencil. Or you do this electronically and open the drawing program of your choice on the device of your choice. Okay, I will assume that everyone has the required equipment. Let's get started. In order to give this a historical touch, we'll discuss two other political systems before we start with that of the Federal Republic of Germany. No worries, these are simple and will help you understand how the current political system is working. Let's get started for real this time. Draw a box at the center of your first piece of paper and write monarch into this box. By that we mean a king, a queen, an emperor, a czar, a sultan, an emir, a tenno, whatever. Done? Okay. You have now completed drawing the political system called absolute monarchy. That was fast, right? That's because in an absolute monarchy, there's just the monarch. He decides everything, does everything, can do everything, is allowed everything. Obviously, there are also institutions there, usually ministers, bureaucracy, judges, some form of parliament or board of advisors. However, these all depend on the goodwill of the monarch, and the monarch can abolish or change these institutions. In such a system, there is no constitution that determines how the state is set up. Louis XIV, French monarch in the 17th and 18th century, described it best when he said, "I am the state." Now please draw a second box below the first one and label it Parliament. And below that, a third box with the label Eligible Voters. And connect Parliament and Eligible Voters with a line. Congratulations! In front of you, you now have the base model of a constitutional monarchy, which mostly existed in the late 18th and 19th century. The main differences. 1. There is a constitution. The word originates from the Latin word constitutio, therefore the name constitutional monarchy. The constitution determines what kind of state organs exist, how they are set up, and what they are responsible for, and how the constitution can be changed. Two, in such a political system, the monarch can no longer do everything himself. He is still head of the government, though, so just like a modern prime minister or president. Three, but now there's also a parliament that is elected by the eligible voters. Parliament has two base functions: creating, changing, and abolishing laws, and creating a budget. The budget determines how much money the government can spend on things. Example, if the king wants to build up a new fleet of warships for 10 billion credits, but the budget that the parliament has passed only allows the spending of 5 billion credits for that, the king has to deal with this. The king is forced to cooperate with the parliament. He can only move within the limits of the law, and the laws are passed by the parliament. And he can only spend as much money as parliament allows him to via the budget. 4. The eligible voters elect the members of parliament. Depending on the political system, the people that are part of the eligible voters vary. The minimum age is usually somewhere between 16 and 25 years. Especially at the beginning, when this political system was new, women were usually not allowed to vote. And oftentimes votes were not equal. Votes of rich people were often much more worth than those of poor people. The constitutional monarchy is the first system to establish the principle of division of power. That means that not a single organ, usually the monarch, has all the power, but that instead power is divided up among different organs. This is supposed to prevent tyranny and abuse, or at least make that more difficult. Additionally, a constitutional monarchy is a major step towards a more free and more democratic society. In countries that abolished monarchy one way or another, the role of the monarch was usually replaced by a strong, directly elected president or a strong, directly or indirectly elected head of government, oftentimes a prime minister or a chancellor. But enough about historical systems of government. Let's start with the political system of the Federal Republic of Germany. New piece of paper, please. At the bottom, a white box, please. Inside, eligible voters. At the time of the creation of this episode, summer 2025, these are all men and women that are German citizens and at least 18 years old. On the left side above that, a new box labeled Bundestag and a line connecting that with the eligible voters. The Bundestag is the German parliament and its members are directly elected by the eligible voters, currently every 4 years. From time to time, it is being discussed whether that should be increased to 5 years. Political parties play a major role here. In theory, a politician without a party could become a member of parliament, but in reality, complex election campaigns can only be managed and financed by political parties, which means that basically all members of parliament are also members of political parties. The Bundestag is the main body responsible for laws in Germany. In some cases, it has to cooperate with the second chamber, the Bundesrat, but we'll get to that later. The second main job of the Bundestag is passing the budget. What was that again? Yes, right, determining how much money the government is allowed to spend on things. On top of that, the Bundestag elects the Bundeschancellor. So the chancellor is being elected directly by the members of parliament and only indirectly by the eligible voters. The eligible voters only elect the people that elect the chancellor. They don't elect him directly. In reality, a chancellor requires the support of several parties in order to get elected. In this case, such an alliance of parties is usually called a coalition or a government coalition. New box above the Bundestag. Label it Bundeschancellor and draw a line to the Bundestag. The Bundeschancellor is the head of government. He appoints the ministers and he is officially appointed by the Bundespräsident. Two new boxes. On the left of the chancellor, one labeled Bundeskabinett, Ministers, and a line to the chancellor. and on the right a box named Bundespräsident and a line to the Chancellor. The Chancellor determines the policy guidelines, so basically he says what should be done. The ministers are responsible for their respective ministries, for example, finances, defense, economy, etc. However, they have to do what the Chancellor expects from them, otherwise he can dismiss and replace them. Also important, the Chancellor remains in office until he is replaced by a new Chancellor. He cannot just be dismissed without a replacement. That's one of the main differences between the Chancellors of the Federal Republic of Germany and the Reichschancellors of the Weimar Republic. Therefore, once a Chancellor is elected, he is in quite a strong position. Now let's talk about the Bundespräsident. Here we have another major difference compared with the political system of the Weimar Republic. There the Reichspräsident was directly elected by the eligible voters and he had a lot of power and influence. But after World War II, there was no desire to have a political system where one person that couldn't be replaced easily had such an amount of power and influence. The Bundespräsident is politically very weak. He is forced to appoint elected chancellors and selected ministers. He has no choice. Basically, there are only two things where the president actually has some freedom of choice. If a chancellor loses a vote of no confidence in parliament and then asks the president to dissolve parliament and schedule re-elections, the president can either do this or refuse to do it. Additionally, if he is of the opinion that a law violates the basic law, he can refuse to sign it and ask the Federal Constitutional Court to review that law. But more about that later. So how is the president elected? Well, for that we need the right side of the piece of paper and we have to start at the bottom again. New box above the eligible voters, this time on the right side. Please label it Landtag. Every German lives in a state and elects members of the state parliament, the so-called Landtag as well. Left of the Landtag box, two more boxes. The first labeled Prime Minister and then Bundesrat. A line from the eligible voters to the Landtag, one from Landtag to Prime Minister and one from Prime Minister to Bundesrat. The Landtag is the parliament of the state. This body passes laws on state level and passes the state level budget. It also elects the prime minister. So again, a head of government is only elected indirectly by the eligible voters. The eligible voters do not elect the prime minister directly, but they elect the people that do. Just like the Bundeschancellor selects and appoints his ministers, the prime minister does the same on state level. The state governments then send delegates to the Bundesrat. The Bundesrat is therefore the second chamber representing state governments, not state parliaments. So if, hypothetically, all states were to be governed by the XY party, then all members of the Bundesrat would be delegates of the XY party, even if the ABC party would be part of all state parliaments. How many delegates a state government can send to the Bundesrat depends on the amount of people living in that state. So states with a large population, like for example North Rhine-Westphalia or Bavaria, have more delegates in the Bundesrat than states with a small population, like for example Bremen or Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. Now let's again review how laws are being made on the federal level. As said, the Bundestag is the main body here. But should a law also affect the states, like for example tax laws, which influence the income of the states, that law needs to have a majority in both the Bundestag and the Bundesrat. If a law does not affect the states, then the Bundesrat can give a statement, but its approval is not required. If Bundestag and Bundesrat are of different opinions regarding a law that requires Bundesrat approval, then a special committee, the so-called conciliation committee, can try to reach a compromise. In reality, the parties involved will try to find such a compromise outside the special committee, though. if a compromise is reached, that compromise needs to be passed by both Bundestag and Bundesrat again. Then the Bundespräsident checks whether the law doesn't violate the basic law, and if that is the case, he has to sign it. I admit, this was a bit more complicated now, but once you get the process, it's quite simple. This leaves us with two things: the constitutional courts and how the Bundespräsident is elected. The Bundespräsident is a special case when it comes to elections. First of all, the president needs to have a minimum age of 40 years. Since the president is politically weak, the position isn't elected directly like during Weimar times. This is being discussed from time to time, but it basically doesn't make sense. Why would you set up a complex and expensive election campaign over a position that basically has no political influence? The Bundespräsident is elected by the Bundesversammlung. This is a political organ with the single purpose of electing the president. The Bundespräsident is elected for 5 years and can only have 2 consecutive terms. So basically, after a maximum time of 10 years, there is a new president. The Chancellor does not have such a term limit. The Bundesversammlung consists of all members of the Bundestag and delegates of the state parliaments. Within the Bundesversammlung, there are as many members of the Bundestag as are delegates of the state parliaments, so the federal and the state level have equal influence within the Bundesversammlung. Important: the state parliaments, not the state governments, send delegates to the Bundesversammlung. So if a party is part of any state parliament, they also get to send delegates to the Bundesversammlung. There is not really an election campaign when it comes to the Bundespräsident, and usually the political parties decide on a candidate long before election day. The parties or the party alliance that has no chance of winning often enters a candidate into the race that is a member of some specific group in society that, according to them, should finally also be represented in this political position. For about 30 years, women have been used this way and have been sent into political battles that were already lost. All Bundespräsidents have been men so far. Finally, we have the constitutional courts on state level and federal level. If someone thinks that a certain law violates the basic law, that someone can ask the constitutional court to review that law. This can be done by any political organ, any group, and any citizen. If the law is considered to be violating the basic law, it is often nullified immediately. In some cases, it is allowed to remain in place for a limited time, giving the parliament time to replace it with something else. The third power, the judiciary power, therefore has some influence on the political process. It cannot make laws, but it can define what is allowed and what isn't. It can basically say, this and this can be part of a law, but not that and that. In principle, Bundestag and Bundesrat can change the basic law with a 2/3 majority, thus making laws that violate the basic law legal again. However, this was never done this blatantly ever. Members of the Federal Constitutional Court are elected by the Bundestag and the Bundesrat for 12 years. The pendant on state level are the state constitutional courts. Some details at the end. Each parliament has a parliament president. This person organizes parliament debates and also checks the finances of the parties. So this position is fairly important. Usually the strongest party within a parliament appoints one of their own members as parliament president. However, a parliament president requires a majority in parliament to get elected. The constitution, the basic law, can be changed with a 2/3 majority. Earlier I mentioned the vote of no confidence. A chancellor can ask for such a vote in order to determine if the majority of parliament still supports him. If he loses this vote, he can ask the Bundespräsident to dissolve parliament and to schedule re-elections. The president is free to do this or to refuse doing that. However, in reality, this vote of no confidence only happens when a chancellor wants re-elections. The Bundestag cannot dissolve itself, another major difference to the Weimar Republic. When a chancellor loses a vote of no confidence, he remains in office. The only way to replace a Bundeschancellor is to elect a new one. This usually happens after federal elections. If this happens in between elections, for example when a government coalition breaks up, this can happen via a so-called constructive vote of no confidence. But that's basically just a complicated term for electing a new chancellor. A normal vote of no confidence, as we had it in the Weimar Republic, is a vote where parliament can topple a chancellor. Should the chancellor lose such a vote, he loses his job. These kinds of votes result in nations losing their head of government. That's why this kind of vote doesn't exist in the Federal Republic. A chancellor remains in office until parliament elects a new one. That's why it's called a constructive vote of no confidence. This ensures that Germany always has a working government. Let's finish with a brief summary. The eligible voters consist of all Germans that are at least 18 years old. The eligible voters elect the Bundestag and the state parliaments. Bundestag and state parliaments pass laws, elect the heads of government, and pass the budgets. The heads of government, so chancellors and prime ministers, appoint the members of government and lead the government. They remain in office until they are replaced by a new head of government. The state governments send delegates to the Bundesrat, the second chamber of parliament in Germany. On the federal level, some laws require the approval of the Bundesrat. If this approval isn't given, the Conciliation Committee tries to work out a compromise. The Bundespräsident is elected by the Bundesversammlung. This organ consists of all members of the Bundestag and delegates of the state parliaments. The Bundespräsident has very little political power and has to do a lot of things without freedom of choice. The only areas where he has influence is when it comes to checking if laws violate the basic law or not, and when it comes to dissolving parliament. The constitutional courts determine if a law violates the basic law or not. They can nullify laws, but they cannot create laws. Their members are elected by the members of the parliaments. The Bundestag gets re-elected every 4 years, state parliaments every 4 or 5 years, the Bundespräsident every 5 years.
A few finishing words.
As mentioned before, please no comments about lobbies, foreign governments, the Illuminati or the lizard people. That serves nobody. This episode is supposed to help people understand how the political system of Germany is set up according to the state constitutions and the basic law. I hope this explanation was helpful, and I hope I didn't include any mistakes or leave important stuff out. If so, please let me know.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.